if I could begin this evening by saying how much I appreciate being part of this family. We had a glitch tonight. We're starting 30 minutes late. We're starting 30 minutes late for a number of reasons. I don't really know the reason. I'll talk a little bit about it because I think it's important to know, and yet the chat room is full. I didn't have anybody say, you know, where in the hell is he? In fact, when I explained that I had somehow goofed here, and I'll share with the goofs, all right, all I received was support. And for everybody that might have tried to have called in or connected 30 minutes or more ago that was unable to, and yet to come back to be part of our family meeting this evening, it just tells me we've got a great group.
Terry says there's no sound coming through on the computer. Okay,
so Terry says there's no sound on the computer. How about the rest listening? Is anybody else able to hear? I get smiling faces from Richard and others, so I'm going to continue on, and I'm going to look at the...
Well, Richard said he could hear dead people singing, so I know he can hear it.
Okay, well, what happened this evening, so that you know, is that I came out to the my carriage house about 20 minutes before showtime. I was washing the dishes after having barbecue dinner. Kind of a ritual that I do with my with my wife and I having dinner. And I brought up the show and noticed that it was not booked. So I went into BTR, and I cannot tell you which of three things happened. One is that I pay an annual fee to be able to broadcast it, somewhere between $350 and $450 bucks a year. My annual time may have expired, which would have canceled anything that would be foregoing. And I'll sign up tomorrow and re-up for another year if that's the case. The second could have been that JB, who scheduled this group of shows, scheduled it through last week, and just didn't know when it was the terminus time. And I've done that before and didn't schedule it further out. It's a mistake that I have made many, many times. And that could be as simple as this whole thing. So I just couldn't figure out how to schedule episodes into the future. And then when I tried to schedule it, I was unable to do so in a timely fashion, so we ended up with this slot. So that's how we got into the mess. I apologize for my clumsiness in this regard, whatever the mistake might have been. I did want, since a lot of people have asked to give an update on my wife, we did take her to Johns Hopkins to have a biopsy done on her pancreas. We have two CAT scans, one of which said there's a mass growing on her pancreas, which is not good. And the second actually describes what they think the mass is, which, while not as bad as the worst case is that she has cancer of the pancreas, which means she would have, on average, 90 days to live. 6 months would be considered a long time, if that's what it turns out to be. If it's the kind of growth that the CAT scan technician thinks, she'd have about twice that time to live, maybe 6 months to a year. So neither of those are very good. Her doctor at Johns Hopkins is the foremost authority in the world on the pancreas. She has a deficient pancreas now, and so the best we can hope for is that just further deterioration of her pancreas, and that it's neither of the two things that would be so catastrophic on her life. We were told that we were going to get the outcome of the biopsy by no later than today. We have not received it. So we don't know. We just go on day to day until we find out more. So that's the situation with my wife. Today, I guess, a rough show. I've been either distracted and supportive of family here, but I started this Chattering Miss show 10 minutes late. And Kirk, you and Scott were discussing the link between the Garden of Eden and the Covenant. That Garden of Eden actually describes the net result of the path we walk to God. Where God said, you know, walk to me and become perfect. Well, we end up in Sukkah. We end up in his home. And the home, Yahweh's best depiction of the home is the conditions in Garden of Eden, where he's chatting with and familiar with Adam, and where the conditions there are perfect. And there's lots to see and lots to do. And we've known that that is a depiction of eternity. But it's what happens next in the story. Because, Larry, what we were doing is I said, all right, let's just look at the Torah in chronological order. It begins with Yahweh explaining how and why he created the universe. He said that the universe was pleasing to him, that it brought him happiness, and that it was good for just being interesting to him and beautiful. You know, it's like doing a... For us, if we could create something that was wonderful to look at, we'd say, hey, that's a noteworthy accomplishment. Yeah, I always said that was the case. Then he created Adam, and he said, hey, that's even better. That's just great. That's enjoyable, beautiful, favorable, desirable. So he's describing how he created and why he created the universe. And he says he gets down on his knees to lift Adam up because he adores him. But we go from there, which is the story of who Yahweh is and why he created the universe, how he created, why he created the universe. The next story is the story of Adam and then of ultimately of Chawa in the Garden of Eden, depicting Yahweh's idea of a perfect relationship. It's just he and Adam having fun together, doing stuff together, enjoying one another's company. Sounds pretty neat to me. And then from there, we have a third story. I mean, we just go chronologically here. What's the third story? Well, Adam and Chawa get booted out of the garden. So there's an interruption in the relationship. The relationship has been hurt. It's been truncated. It's not dissolved. It's just suffering. It's not what it used to be. And so Yahweh wants to restore his relationship. But what he finds is once Adam and Chawa get out of the garden, man, humankind becomes, well, like we are today. Repulsive, miserable, disgusting, and violent and abusive. And Yahweh just saddens by the whole thing. The whole purpose of the creation was to have a relationship with humankind, right?
Mm-hmm.
And humankind became way too repulsive to have a relationship with. So what's Yahweh's solution? He wishes he hadn't done it, just created man. And then he says, you know, I'm not going to give up. Got to be somebody out there.
Thank you.
Somebody out there worth knowing. And who did he reach
out to?
It was Noah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just Noah. He wanted to make a point that it's family. I'm here to have a family relationship. And it was Noah and the eight members of his family. Does eight mean anything to you guys?
Eternity.
Yeah.
Right. So what is he speaking about? Right. A family for all time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. So this is the part of it that it gave me goosebumps today. And I was just so glad that I was late to the show. We were talking about something I was ill-prepared to talk about. Because all of a sudden, it just struck me that, wait a minute. This is everything that you need to know. You know, Christians will tell you that you're saved through faith and it's not of yourselves. You don't have to do squat. You don't even have to bother to know God. You don't have to pay attention to anything he says. You're just saved through faith. Did Noah get saved through his faith?
Yeah, they're also the same way. Yeah, same way we do.
What it struck me is, didn't Yahweh give Noah five instructions? I want you to build the ark this long, this tall, this wide. I want you to use this kind of wood, and then I want you to seal the wood using this kind of pitch. He gave him five instructions.
That's right.
Did he build the ark for Noah?
Noah listened to the Torah to God's instructions.
Right.
Yeah.
And he engaged and built it based upon Yahweh's instructions. And it is for that reason that he and his family were whisked away and protected. But isn't that exactly
I got a question for you.
Now, isn't that rather profound? Isn't that exactly what Yahweh wants us to do? He gave us five instructions to be part of the covenant, and unless you listen to what Yahweh has to say and act upon those instructions, you're like the other saps out there that were trying to tread water for 40 days.
That's pretty profound. Yep, five instructions. That's right.
Right.
Yep, that's right. And
now,
by the way,
you had mentioned
you know, Christianity's thoughts. Well, you know, most people, not just Christians, but all over the world, seem to think if you have this unbelievable belief in God, you know, they just, you believe in God, that that'll do it for you, which is really
for Noah. Did it do it for Noah?
No, it didn't do it for Jawa, as far as I know. I mean,
yeah. By the way, did it take? Did we have any indication that Jawa pulled all the gopher wood and cut it down for Noah?
Didn't do any.
No.
Do we have any indication that Jawa put the pitch of Budiman and buckets and heated it all up for Noah so the Noah could pour it into the gaps? Do we have any indication that Noah operated a sawmill right there for Noah? Did Noah provide a crane for Noah?
No.
Did he instructed him how to build glue lambs so that he could actually build this thing. Because if it was solid beams, he couldn't move anything. But he taught him how to build glue lambs. But all Yahweh did is provide Noah with instructions. That was it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he told Noah, you know, I'm going to tell you why I want you to build this thing. I want to take the benefit for you and your family to build this thing. Here are the instructions now. Based on these instructions, you act. And Noah did. I mean, that's the entire thing. It wasn't based on the fact that if Noah said, hey, listen, I believe in you. I know that I believe in you. And he had done nothing else. He'd have drowned with the rest of the four elf saps out there, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So it had nothing to do with his faith. It had everything to do with he listened and he acted. It's exactly what Yahweh is expecting the rest of us. Listen to what he has to say in his Torah. Respond to it. And if you don't respond, it's goodbye.
Yeah, and here's the thought, too. That's a wonderful thought that, you know, that's very profound, that there were five instructions. Just like
We're just getting going here.
But the other thing is that, you know, the reason that I think we are all aware that the reason Satan was allowed in the garden was that he didn't want to keep Adam and Chawa like birds in a cage. He wanted them to leave and have to choose him.
Right.
And when they left, now we know Adam did. I'm not sure about Chawa, but I know Adam did choose to be with Yahweh.
Yeah.
And the thing is, they would have had to make a choice and respond to Yahweh, because they didn't just believe in Yahweh; they knew him.
Yeah. And by the way, I think the likelihood that Chawa is also part of the relationship. Yes.
I think it's very high.
Yeah, I think it's extraordinary high, just based on her name.
Yeah,
her name means to give life. Yeah, she's a model.
But it does point out that Adam certainly. Yeah,
Adam is, point Adam is for certain. We're not told about Chawa, but at this point we know Yahweh pretty well, and his application.
She's
there too. Okay, so
yeah, the point is it wasn't based on them believing there was a Yahweh. They knew there was a Yahweh.
Right, they knew it.
They began to respond to him.
And the fact is that they were that they knew him. They had therefore infinitely greater than faith in him, and yet they were still expunged from the gardens and separated from a relationship, even though they had complete and total faith in him all the way up to the point of absolute knowledge of him. Mm-hmm. And yet they were still booted out, so faith in him didn't help them at all, did it?
No. Yeah, but belief in God didn't do it.
No, belief in God did not do it, which is a complete anathema for Christianity and Pauline Christianity, that faith is what does it. So what you have is five instructions, and these instructions are the same kind of instructions that would have us engage in the covenant. What is the first instruction of the covenant, Larry?
Walk out of Babylon.
Right. Separate yourself from your country, from human institutions. What did Noah and his family have to do? What was the single most challenging? If you were to take one thing from all of this, if you were to compare Noah and the people's response to him and Noah's response to them, what is the overriding theme of the beginning of this ark project?
Well, he listened to Yahweh.
And he separated himself from the human institutions that were all saying, hey, man, you're nuts.
He didn't pay attention to them. He didn't care.
It's beyond that. He separated himself from them. He says, yeah, I'm not paying attention to you guys. My family and I, we're on the first boat out of town, even if we have to build the deck on that. We're leaving you guys.
It's the only boat out.
It was total and complete.
It's like the Tarua train, man.
Right, man. I'm taking the boat out of town. I am leaving you guys. And it's an exact portrayal of what it means to take a boat out of town and separate yourself from the rest of human dogmas and schemes. So the first part of the first thing they had to do happens to be the first requirement of the covenant.
Yeah, they had to separate themselves. They had to become set apart.
They had to decide that they were going to listen to Yahweh, and they were going to follow his advice and be separate unto him in this ark versus being aligned with the rest of humankind. That was the first choice. What's the second thing? What's the second aspect of the covenant? You want to be part of the covenant? What's the next thing you have to do? It's one thing to walk away from Babel, from human, religious, and political institutions, from mankind. What's the second thing you have to do?
Trust and rely on Yahweh, on Yahweh.
Correct. And what did...
Walk towards Yahweh.
Right. Yeah. Trust and rely on Yahweh. What did these guys... Yeah. What did Noah and his family do? Yahweh provided them instructions. They trusted that those instructions would provide the protection and the result Yahweh was offering.
Yeah, they listened to him and they acted upon.
Right.
Which is number three. You gotta act.
No. Number three is walk to me and become perfect.
Yeah. Walk that's acting upon. Perfect.
So
now that one wipes out Paul right there.
Okay. Walk to me and become perfect. What's the first step towards walking to Yahweh, Larry?
That'd be entering the Pesach door.
Right. Was there any conversation with this ark? Did Yahweh mention a door to this ark?
Yes.
A bazillion times, right? He keeps on talking about the daggum door, doesn't he?
Yeah. not a major issue on most ships, by the way.
By the way, how many ships do you know that have a door?
Yeah,
ships don't have doors, do they? No, ships don't have doors. This ship had a door. And Yahweh is fixated on, put the door here. And did Yahweh say, hey, by the way, Noah, you and your family, you can go aboard this ark any old time you want. Or did he say, now, this is the day I want you to go through that door?
He told him one day. He told him exactly when.
So what you've got is a specific door on a specific day. Does a specific door on a specific day remind you of anything that's part of the third requirement of the covenant?
That would be the Pesach door. It takes place on the 14th day of the first month.
Right.
Sunday.
What is the second step to Yahweh for all of us?
Becoming perfect.
Becoming perfect. What is the overall symbol that Yahweh uses to cleanse us and make us perfect?
Unleavened bread.
He uses unleavened bread in this description. But what is the universal symbol throughout the Torah of cleansing?
Water.
Water. What happened the day they walked through that door?
Amazing.
There was a flood.
More water than you can speak of, right?
Big hello.
Started with deep ocean water.
Right.
Yeah. The vertical asteroid.
And then water that came from the side, from underneath, and from above. Water everywhere. That's cleansing. That's matzah. And then what was the result? We had one family that had been restored from all of humankind.
They'd been adopted into Yahweh's covenant.
By Yahweh, protected by his covenant. They were celebrating B'Kurim that next day. Can you imagine the excitement of being born into Yahweh's coveted family on that day as you're watching everything that's happened around you and the whole rest of the world has gone away?
It would justify everything you had done and said.
And just imagine, because Noah, he was so disgusted with all of these people yapping at him and giving all their religious and political pontifications and practical assessments. And all of a sudden, he and his family were free of them. And the only one they were with besides their family was with Yahweh. They were born anew right at that moment. Now, did it rain for 40 days and 40 nights?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, after it rained, were they able to disembark that ark from that ark the day that it stopped raining?
No.
Stopped raining?
No.
How many days is it between Bukudim and Shavuot?
It's 40 and
49, right?
49. Seven sevenths. Yeah.
Right. You know how many days it took from the time that that it stopped raining to the.
I'm going to guess 9.
Yeah.
I have never paid attention to
now,
it.
So now what do we have? Because we had
that's
three sevens, and then the came back, and they had to send out another one, and finally that one came back with a olive branch, and then a week later it was, there you go, 9. So what do you think they were?
Yeah, now I feel like an idiot that I didn't catch that. But that's so obvious.
I didn't until this morning. And this morning, it had nothing to do with Kirk. You're wonderful. It had nothing to do with me. It's just all of a sudden, the light went on.
That's astounding, isn't it? That's
so
astounding.
So they're celebrating on the top of the mountain. They're celebrating exactly the same thing. Another fella celebrated on the top of the mountain on this very day. What day did Moshe receive the Torah from Yahweh on the top of Mount Horeb?
That would be on Shavuot.
It would
have been seven sevens plus one. Yeah,
so we have the enrichment of Shavuot at that very moment. And as a result of all of this, what has Noah and his family become for the rest of the world?
A symbol.
In fact, what does Noah mean? Noah means trustworthy guy, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so he and his family have become teruah. They're troubadours to the covenant. So what it means to listen to Yahweh and respond. They are the living embodiment of teruah. And while mankind had severed their relationship with Yahweh, with this family, that relationship was Yom Kippur, wasn't it? Reconciled. And then, without all of the bums on the earth, he and his family were celebrating Sukkah, living in God's home like it was the Garden of Eden all over again. That's the third step of the covenant, walk to me and become perfect. Well, they did a lot of sailing, but, halak means more than just walk. It's a course from one place to another.
And when they got there, they were enriched and empowered. They all flourished.
Yep. And became reconciled in their relationship at Tubador for this and living with God in his home. So the fourth covenant, the fourth requirement of the covenant, what is it, Larry?
Well, to be enriched and empowered.
No, the fourth.
No, that's a benefit. Okay, the requirement.
Requirement.
Is to... you have to be adopted into the family.
No,
that's
you know, Kirk, what's the fourth requirement of the covenant?
You've got to carefully examine and consider the covenant agreement.
Right, that's exactly right. It's an armed form. What did Yahweh say after Noah and his family were all safe and sound? Didn't Yahweh produce a rainbow and say, this rainbow is the sign?
Yes, he did.
Covenant?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
so,
he did.
So if the fourth condition to participate in the covenant is to observe it, Yahweh prison right there gave us all a sign that we could observe this story of Noah and understand the terms and conditions and the benefits of the covenant. That's the fourth step, isn't it? Now, circumcision signs is the sign of the covenant with Abraham, because the covenant with Abraham is about conceiving a family that can be part of Yahweh's family. Just as the rainbow is the sign of the covenant made with Noah, which tells us that these rains that he brought, this water that he brought to cleanse and to separate Noah and his family because they listened to him and responded to what he had to say, will bring us new life. And that new life is depicted by all of the colors of light because that's how we're going to be spiritually reborn. This is a spiritual story of Noah and his family. And we're going to be spiritually reborn into light.
Wow, that's really good. Pastor, you're sharp.
No, I'm not sharp. I'm just telling you that that was
sharp.
A pretty good storyteller.
That's a connector there. You know, the light
when it comes to Yah, the story that
wow.
he tells is always brilliant. It's always enlightening. Every element of the story fits together, and it's always consistent. That's the story of the of how the covenant relationship with Abraham and thus with us is told in a very pragmatic way in the story of Noah and his family in the ark.
So when someone says, you know, they didn't know the Torah back before Abraham, you just go, I beg your pardon?
What did Yahweh give to Noah that enabled him to build the perfect ship?
A plan.
Instruction. What is the Hebrew word for plan, instruction, teaching, and direction?
Torah.
Same thing he gave to Abraham. Same thing he gives to all the rest of us. So that's where we spent the morning, Larry, and it was a profound eye opener. One of the most enjoyable times I've had in recent memory is just walking through the way that Yahweh tells this story and how it reinforces something that we've come to know, but it's just so radically different than what everybody else wants you to believe. That the covenant has requirements, that there are 5 specific instructions that guide us to participation in Yahweh's family. And you either listen to what Yahweh has to say and act upon them, or you're left out, treading water. Now, I would ask you, Larry,
mm-hmm.
did Noah at any point say, you know, that's too damn big a boat? Did he say that lumber's too heavy to lift? Did he say the pitch is really, really nasty stuff, and why don't we use beeswax instead? At any point, did Noah try to modify the plan to see if God would go along?
Nope.
And what, at any point, did he question the plan?
He just listened to the instructions.
Did he at any point say, you know, God, you might be good with some stuff, but why don't you leave the boat building to me? I know. Was there any of that?
He didn't have any of the usual religious, well, I know what you're thinking here, but I think maybe a big canoe will be better. It's easier for me to build. It doesn't take a lot of effort.
And create a paraphrase, and I really make a boat out of palm fronds because they're a hell of a lot lighter.
Yeah.
What if I look at this symbolically? What if I just look at this symbolically and I create the model of a boat in my head? Yahweh will know that where my heart is, and
right.
It'll all work out.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah,
I want to take this a step further. If Yahweh gave Noah very specific instructions, very specific, I mean, there is no question. Yahweh said, this long, this wide, this tall, out of this kind of wood, put together with this kind of pitch. You know, the door goes right here, and it's right this size, and you go in it on this specific day. If Yahweh gave him very specific instructions, and Noah listened and didn't try to change any of them, and the result was that Noah and his family were protected by Yahweh, and their relationship was reconciled with the rest of the world, drowned. How would that tell you is the best way to respond to the terms and conditions of the covenant?
By listening to what Yahweh said and responding in that appropriate manner. The way he told you to.
Right. So if somebody
in our case, it's mainly observe. You know,
so Larry, if somebody were to come up to you, or Kirk, somebody to come up to you and say, you know, I can't believe God would be so pedantic that and so mean that if some old guy I wasn't circumcised, but did everything else that God would exclude him from heaven. Do we have any indication anywhere that God says, you know, my instructions really aren't all that important, and you can change them and modify them to your liking? I'll go along with whatever you think is fair.
No, he's adamant against that position.
No, his position is I'm not a liar, and I mean what I say, and not one word.
If you don't think what I'm saying is good for you, if you don't think it applies, if you don't think it's worthy,
walk away.
Then just walk away. In fact, you don't have to walk away. You're already away.
That's true.
Yeah, in other words, don't come near me. That's fine.
The whole notion of how far can we be divergent from Yahweh's instructions and still be the recipient of those benefits. And every time that I hear that, my immediate response is, why would you want to differ? Why would you want to argue with the architect of life? Why would you want to argue? Why would you want to renegotiate the best deal in the history of the universe? But if you do, why don't you look at, well, what happened to Abraham? Did he argue any of these points?
No.
No.
Well, he questioned a couple of things from time to time, but
he said, Yahweh, I don't understand. What am I inheriting? Now, I'm going to tell you, if not understanding and asking God a question, and I want to understand this, is changing God's position, then I don't understand communication.
No. Well, we're all in trouble if that's
right.
The case. I
now,
mean, we
all know
trouble.
What that is. I don't get it. I don't understand. Could you please explain it to me? And what did Yahweh say? You stupid, ridiculous, ungrateful idiot that would question.
No, he showed him.
Yeah, that's what he said? Yeah, that's right. I see it right there in Bereshit. Yeah.
So what he says, okay, all right. You know, I get it. You don't get it. You're an old fart. Your wife's infertile. You don't have a kid. And I'm talking about an inheritance. And you don't understand what I'm talking about. Because from your point of view, you can't imagine much more life. You're already, close to 100 years old. You can't imagine inheriting something beyond what you've already lived. I understand that. And you can't even imagine you having a kid that's going to inherit what you which you have, so you don't have a kid, and your wife's infertile, and besides that, she's 90. I get it. You don't get it. But so I'll take you. I'll show you. What you're going to inherit is light. I'm going to take you to the spiritual realm. I'm going to show you the light of the stars. I'm going to explain it to you, what it's really all about to be in the seventh dimension. That's what he did, didn't he? So Yahweh doesn't have a problem. So obviously, and then immediately after he showed all of this to Abraham, Yahweh immediately says, I counted all of this to vindication and perfection and uprightness and righteousness to Abraham, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. So that.
Right then, right now, Yahweh said, from that point on, man, we were good. We were good. He understood what I was offering. No more questions after that point. We don't find Abraham ever again questioning anything that Yahweh said. And so he's not testing Yahweh in the sense of saying, can we negotiate on this? The only thing that Abram attempts to negotiate with has nothing to do with the covenant. Nothing.
Right. It has to do with destroying Sodom and Gomorrah.
Right. Yeah. And so what he's asking Yahweh is a question of how many people had to be righteous in Sodom for him to spare the place.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept on asking Yahweh different numbers. Yahweh's not changing his mind. There's no indication Yahweh's changing his mind. He's just asking, if there were 100, would you spare it? Yeah, I'd spare it for 100. Well, how about, 50? Yeah, I'd spare it 50. Well, how about 10? Yeah, I'll spare it if there were 10. Did he not spare humankind and there were 8?
Mm-hmm.
I got a question. Kirk, if you and your wife were the only two people alive, would he have endured everything he endured on Pesach and Matzah for years?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. He'd have done it all for Adam, wouldn't he?
Absolutely.
By him saying, yeah, I'd do it if it was 10. Didn't he say that there will be tens of thousands and, thousands, thousands and thousands amongst millions. More than a million. He's trying to say, I would spare life and the opportunity to be in this covenant relationship if there was one person there.
Yeah.
You know, it tells you how special it is. How special it is.
Special it is.
Family.
How special it is. You're exactly right.
It also tells you that there's no religious groups with masses of people that could be correct. It just isn't so. It couldn't be.
Couldn't be. And isn't. And so we have in this story with Noah and reaffirmed with Abraham. I know a lot of Christians and a lot of religious people think that Abraham was negotiating with God and God was negotiable. Read that story. God's not negotiable at all. Abraham is asking God questions and God is answering his questions. We're empowered, we're authorized, we're encouraged to seek answers from God. He wants us to question.
Yeah.
He wants us to, the kind of stuff we just did with the ark, and to question how these things fit together, that's what he wants us to do. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, test the waters this way, see if it makes sense to you.
Yeah, but my mind actually went, when you asked the question, my mind actually went to Ishmael, and that wasn't really an argument. He just, he asked, "What can it be him?" But I think that's almost a great opportunity because Yahweh can say, absolutely not, for all time. So it's right there in record about what ultimately comes a claim of the Muslims.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that was Abraham.
Well, he was pulling that in a little bit.
In fact, it's better that Abraham did ask for that modification.
Yeah, I think so.
Because what was Yahweh's answer to modification?
Absolutely no.
Absolutely no. Won't even consider it. Absolutely. Specifically
so it reinforced it.
Right. It reinforced it. So what is the likelihood that Yahweh is going to say, I'm going to accept an entirely new plan articulated by Paul of salvation through the gospel of grace?
It just gets more ridiculous, doesn't it? I mean, you just can't. No.
Yeah.
Wow.
It gets to be wholly and completely ridiculous. So we get right back to where we have been for a long time, which is that the covenant has terms and conditions. The Torah exists to present those terms and conditions. And we either listen to Yahweh and accept those terms and conditions and act upon them, or we're outside treading water. And Yahweh's not going to change them.
No.
Not going to modify them. Absolutely not. And so, in the story of Noah's Ark, we have every aspect of the story of the covenant with Abraham pre-told. And you know what's the next story after Abraham in the Torah?
Well, the next big story is when we get up to David at that time.
No, not Abraham.
No. I'm sorry. We got to go to Moshe.
No. Before Moshe. After Abraham.
Well, we have
Joseph. And what's the Joseph a story of? About ending back up in the troubled religious and
back in quicksand.
Right back in quicksand. Having been abandoned by the family and over there in quicksand all again. And doesn't it foretell the story of how Yahweh is going to resolve that problem for us, and that
mm-hmm.
every aspect of Yosef's life is mirrored in Yosef's?
Yeah, that's the parallels are quite amazing for us.
Oh, it's like 50 of them, one after another, of the parallels between Yosef and Yahusha. And same place for the same reason, and it also parallels what Moshe would do with Yahweh. Yeah, I was talking with Scott after the show today, and we were talking about how it's that we really, all of us, had an advantage. I talked a little bit with this with Frank today, later too, on the telephone. We all had a tremendous advantage. Yahweh reached out to all of us before we knew him. I would not know him if he hadn't reached out to me before I knew him. But how is that any different than Noah,
or
Moshe, or Abraham? Did Yahweh reach out to all of them before they knew him?
Mm-hmm.
They still had the opportunity to reject him if they wanted to, or they could say, you know, what you're saying makes sense. I'm in. I want to know more. Let's do this together. And did any one of them start on top of the game, you know, having all the answers and being stalwarts in the relationship, or did some growing pains?
No, everybody has to grow.
Yeah. So, yeah, we reached out to all of us, invited us to participate, get to know him, participate in his covenant, and revealed his insights, you know, over a period of time. We didn't start immediately knowing everything. All right, well, kind of with that said, I thought maybe we would go back to the 22nd Psalm. Is that all right? Or somebody have
you? Sure, surely.
Oh, I know. Before we do that, Kirk, looked up the word for the ark that is Noah's, and the Aaron, the ark that became the covenant.
Right.
The letters and the
Sure. What I found was that when you look up the normal route on the Ark of Noah's Ark, then you get a word that's translated Ark from Baha, and Baha is a at the root meaning it's just a empty space needing to be filled, a box, something of that nature, which is fine. But the interesting part is when you look at the two letters, which are a Beth and a Hey. And, of course, that's a family home and a person who's engaged in walking to that home or engaged looking up to Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
So even at its very root meaning is quite interesting. I thought of it as a it also says that it's a an empty space needing to be filled, and I kind of project it to a home needing to be filled with a family.
Right.
Or you could even say a hole in Yah's heart waiting to be filled with a family,
right,
because that's how much he feels for us.
Right.
So
the Hebrew word for Noah's Ark is a engaged person,
mm-hmm.
acting, moving along, reaching up, paying attention to him,
mm-hmm.
and as a result being part of his family.
Part of the family. Mm-hmm. Being part of the home. Entering the home.
How could you have a word any more perfect to describe that ark, and how much do we lose? We just call it Noah's Ark versus Yahweh's home for engaged and observant individuals.
Well, it's another one of those things where you look and you say, you know, they just change everything that has any meaning. So it's just it's so hard if you don't do your homework.
So here and the letters are profoundly mm-hmm. more insightful than are the definitions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went back to the oldest ones, you know, just go back to the root thing to see what was there as well. So, but when you get to the Ark of the Covenant, now we got some, you know, that's Aaron, the enlightened free will, and that's some pretty good letters there. So, you've got an Aleph, which is symbolic of the head of the family, the one able to do the work, the strength, the Almighty. You've got the next letter, of course, is the Rosh, and the Rosh is the head of a man, or head of a person, I should say, man or woman, and that's the one who sees with their eyes, Shama, or hears with the ears, Shama and Shamar, can speak, and can pay attention and study. And then we have the Wah, which we all know is the one we use as a conjunction and, but where it always implies that it is to enlarge something and to increase something. In this case, obviously, we're talking about the family.
And
the last, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And to make connections between things.
Sure, connections between, exactly. Well, the and, a conjunction,
yeah.
And then, of course, the last letter is the Nun, and the Nun being the sperm, which is a symbolic of the inheritance of the family and that growth of the family. So you have Aaron, enlightened free will. You have an authority with the power and the ability to do the work, to gather the observant person, the one who shamars Torah, the enlargement of the family, and the enlargement of what family? Those that are those who inherit all that Yah has to offer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's big stuff where I come from.
Yeah, the sperm, the those born with an inheritance.
Yeah.
which is the whole purpose of the covenant, is to be born with an inheritance.
Mm-hmm. And Yah chooses the words. I mean, this is, he chooses the alphabet,
the
he chooses the words, and he puts them all together. So, I mean, everywhere you turn, same story, even more profound and more insightful.
Yeah, well, I sent you guys an article that, you know, on second thought I wish I hadn't sent, because I sent it before I read it. And somebody was using numbers to associate, I think it was Jesus Christ with
it was Jesus with the number 666. It was the USA with the number 666. It was
By using 9 and the English alphabet.
Yeah, which has nothing to do with anything, as far as I can tell.
Jesus has nothing to do with anything. Christ has nothing to do with anything. The English alphabet has nothing to do with anything. You apply numerology to the English alphabet, you're absolutely wasting your time. Hebrew letters were used as numbers. The Aleph was the number one. The Beth was the number two. So Hebrew, the numbers mean something. If you want to apply numbers to Hebrew to deduce meanings, you're on solid ground.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do so in any other language, you're just wasting your time.
Yeah.
And that's what struck me about all of that, is that you want to look at the letters that comprise the words in Hebrew and see how they were drawn to understand what the words mean, because Yahweh chose this alphabet, he chose this language, and he did so to communicate to us deep and profound thoughts on many different levels. And this is a great example. So is the story of Noah about building boats?
Hardly.
About floods? Hardly. Hardly. And by the way, just to piece it all together and how we should have figured this out long ago, what does the name Noah mean?
Trustworthy God.
Trustworthy God.
Yeah. So what are we being guided to that we can trust in the story of Noah?
Yahweh's instructions, I believe.
Take us to him.
Yahweh's instructions take us to him, right? And if the instructions, the terms and conditions of the covenant, if we listen to him and rely on him, we will end up in a fine, fine place. Yeah. Pretty straightforward, but awesomely inspiring.
Yeah.
Well, when we got down to the days especially, and then it was 9 days later,
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
They were enriched and empowered.
Got to send those two birds out, and then it was a week. Oh, there you go. Okay, to the enduring and everlasting, Laha Nasha, concerning the dawn, the sunrise, of the Almighty's assistance, a song, a mizmor of Dode, of love. Kind of interesting that he would use Ha Shakar and then Al for assistance in this opening. And we're going to go through the beginning of this relatively quickly to get back to where we were the last time. That's Psalm 22:1. So, enduring and everlasting. So, to the enduring and everlasting, concerning the dawn, the sunrise of the Almighty's assistance. The Almighty's assistance was because the sun rose. The Almighty's assistance is because out of the darkness of Sheol, the light was deep. The light emerged. He saw the light again. And the fact that he was reunited with the light of Yahweh, which is the set-apart spirit, that is the dawn of our beginning. We have no means of celebrating Bukurim without the light that shone on that day out of the darkness of Matzah. And this is the celebration of Yahweh's, the dawn of Yahweh's plan of reconciliation taking place on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. So this begins by announcing that this is the dawn of everlasting life, a song with lyrics composed out of love. Pretty strong introduction. I would pay attention to this. But what follows is the single most important clue. I don't think there's a clue in all of the Torah, prophets, Psalms, or even the words recorded by Yahweh Kanan and Matanyah that are as overall instructive as these words. my God, why have you forsaken me? And what do you think, Kirk, Larry? Why do I think that those are perhaps the most important, most insightful words in the totality of these things that we've been discussing?
Hey, well, for me, is you immediately realize that you can't make a God out of Yahusha. He's not a replacement God. He is separated. He's going to die, and God don't die.
That's correct.
He can't be separated from himself. So
that is correct.
Somewhere else,
a dying God all of a sudden is an impossibility. How about another profound? On profound things, that is stunningly profound, because what is the basis of Christianity? That God died for your sins. This explains that God did not die for our sins. God's not dying.
He cannot
separate himself from the physical body of the sacrificial lamb that is died. So that's really profound, but there's more to it than that. I mean,
well, the fact that Yahweh's spirit couldn't be involved in Sheol.
Right.
That's where that spirit was going.
Right.
And it's Sheol's defined by a separation from Yahweh. It's a Zab.
Right.
And so there can't be any light or fire.
Profound. That God cannot go to the place of separation from God. So what's going to occur at Matzah is that the soul of Yahusha is going to go to the place where Yahweh is not. And that Sheol is nothing more than eternal separation from Yahweh. That's also profound. How about this one? What is the most challenging statement that if you were to take all of the statements that come from Yahusha, which one is the most difficult for Christians to process? That no Christian will ever even attempt to process this one, because it's the one you go, what's the hardest thing that he said?
I go to, you can't change. I didn't come to change one jot and tittle.
Well, that's a pretty big. I can't argue.
I think I'd go to this one right here.
Oh, I thought I would too.
I would too. This was the one that got me, because in Christianity, the totality of God is in this man, and if he's saying that God is forsaking him, that's no longer possible. So Christianity. There isn't a Christian on the planet that can deal with this passage. No one will even talk about it, because it is utterly devastating, because it says that he is no longer God. And so there still is a God, but it isn't him. So I just think that that part is devastating, but then where that takes us is why I think this is the most profound statement in the totality of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Where does this statement take us? Yahusha's statement that it's impossible for Christians to answer. Where does it take us?
It takes us to the fact that Yahusha is not the totality of God, period.
Well, it takes us to someplace even more direct. It takes us to the 22nd Psalm. He's not
asking
questions.
Yes, it does. Absolutely does.
Listen, if God, Yahusha, even though he's not Yahweh at that moment, because the set-apart spirit has left him, he is still the most extraordinary person that has ever lived, the smartest, most extraordinary, best-informed person in the entire universe. He is not wondering why God has left. He's not asking Yahweh why you have left me. He knows. So what is he doing?
Telling us.
He's reciting the 22nd Psalm. At this moment, why is he reciting the 22nd Psalm? Because he wants us to know why he's there. And when you read the 22nd Psalm, you come to understand why he's there.
Yeah, sure you do.
What else do you come to know by reading the 22nd Psalm?
I'm sorry, say again?
What else do you come to know if you realize that Yahusha was quoting the 22nd Psalm because he wanted us to consider it in light of what was happening there? What else do you come to know when you read the 22nd Psalm?
Whenever you need an answer, you go to the Torah.
There you go. How about this? That since crucifixion Roman style and flagellum whipping Roman style were specifically presented in this 1,000 years before that form of crucifixion existed, 750 years before Rome even existed.
Oh, yeah, it's proving prophecy. It's prophetic.
Right.
It's prophetic.
It's proving the divine inspiration of what Dode wrote, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So now you can trust everything Dode wrote. There is no way that Dode just happened to foresee Roman-style flagellum whipping followed by Roman-style crucifixion and all of the scientific aspects of crucifixion that wouldn't be known for another 3,000 years.
Yeah, and you get people that talk about, I've had a couple people say, oh, you know, there was a crucifixion before that.
No, there wasn't.
Not in that style, there wasn't.
No, there wasn't. No, the Assyrians came up with it about 400 BCE with ropes.
Yeah,
and Roman-style crucifixion didn't begin until somewhere around 50 BCE. No, it didn't. That's just the history of it. And even today, we are just now seeing the first archaeological proofs that Roman-style crucifixion with nails actually occurred at this time. And it's just in the last 5 or 6 years that we have found evidence that it occurred in this way.
Well, I do recall a Time magazine article that ran a story where they had found found a spike to a foot.
Yes.
You know that.
Yes.
So I mean, it's plenty of information out there if you're looking. I mean, it
yes.
seems to be.
Yeah.
You can't argue the point.
Yes.
You know, so.
And they did. And yeah. and it was a person named Yao Kamen. And it was in the second. The late 1st, early 2nd century CE
mm-hmm.
by the Romans in Israel. All right, so that's another thing that we learn. I think there's something even more profound that we learn if we read the 22nd Psalm. And my conclusion is, maybe I'm wrong, but my conclusion is that the 22nd Psalm is the best eyewitness account explaining not only the rejection by humankind and the ultimate sacrifice of the Passover lamb on Passover, but it's the only eyewitness account of precisely what happens on Matzah. The only one. It gives us an eyewitness account of what's happening on Matzah on that from that dark perspective, and then of what happens on Bukurim, and how those 3 days play out and precisely what's happening on those 3 days. You find none of that in the Christian New Testament. You don't even find that in the eyewitness accounts. It's only here.
In fact, if someone did celebrate that as a Christian, not a sense of celebrating, but if they did acknowledge it as a Christian, the only place they can find is in the Torah, and then they got real problems because Paul said the Torah is annulled.
Yeah. Now the Torah presents the doorway, and it presents matzah as cleansing, and it presents Bukurim as being born and adopted into Yahweh's family. It presents what these days represent. It tells us when to celebrate them. The fact that Yahushua would celebrate them on these days, and that he himself was the living sacrifice and the beneficiary of these days. I understand that you can understand what's taking place and why he's there at this specific time doing these things. But the only eyewitness account of exactly how it went down, blow by blow, is in this psalm. So when Yosha is citing this psalm, he's telling you, hey, folks, pay attention. I'm going to explain to you right now. In fact, if you were listening to it and you heard, my God, why have you forsaken me? It's the opening line to one of the most empowering psalms that Dode ever wrote. And so anybody that was paying attention would go to the psalm and say, okay, he just recited it. Maybe that's where I should go.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, I think this is the most important statement in the totality of the of what we read. I don't know if there's anything else that's more insightful than this.
No, there isn't. There's a pretty good painting, a pretty fair picture in, Yashayah as well.
Yeah, there is. But the one in Yashayah, while it is derived from the whole experience of the Passover lamb, and it talks about how that he will come back into the light, which means that his soul was reunited with the set apart spirit. While that is a marvelous,
and he does say, extending his hands and arms, spreading himself out for our sake.
And by the way, I don't want to make the argument that that Yahweh ever tells us something like this in one place.
No.
So, if you needed help understanding the 22nd Psalm, the natural place to go is the presentation of the sacrificial lamb who took on the sins of the world, not for himself, but for us, in Yashayah 53 and 54. So that's the place you're going to go if you want to know more about the fact, because he's doing this on Passover. So I would agree.
This is the combination of both of them, but he said what he said, right, making it clear. I mean, he did draw everybody's attention to Psalm 22.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what
here.
He did.
So, I understand that Yashayah, really, most of Yashayah is really talking about him and the role that he's playing as the sacrificial lamb, but particularly...
Yeah, I've never gotten over, and we talked about this last week, how people just get around this stuff. I mean, how do you just...
Why would you want to?
If you have a brain. I'm just wondering why people allow themselves to get pulled over this stuff.
The name that Yahweh chose to define this mission of the diminished manifestation of himself set apart from himself is Yahusha, meaning Yahweh saves. And so the next thing out of Yahusha's lips, now that the set apart spirit is no longer with him, now that he's no longer Yahweh, is far from, away from Yahusha. Are the words of my distress. He is no longer Yahweh saving us.
No.
Yeah, I know.
I know. Yahweh had to leave because Yahweh can't die, and Yahweh can't go to the place of salvation. But he can sacrifice something very dear to him. He tells us how highly we ought to respect our soul, because our soul is the unique thing that makes us special. And this is his soul.
Mm-hmm.
He has a soul for this express purpose. And right now, Yahusha is the furthest word from his distress. And, by the way, Yahweh's not going to be saving this soul. He's going to let this soul endure the wrath. What did he say in 2 Shamuel? When he is associated with...
He wasn't going to spare the rod at all.
That's what's happening here. I continually call out, we talked about this the other day, Kara, what is Passover? It's the first of
That's a mikra. That's Kara.
Right.
That's an invitation.
Yeah. Right. No, I'm telling you that here I'm celebrating the mikra for you. I may not be celebrating it at the moment. I'm observing it.
That's one of those signposts you talk about where there's a finger,
and
a thumb, and it's going, look, dummy, look,
dummy,
hey,
yeah,
dummy,
yeah,
look,
dummy,
look,
look. Yeah.
The cartoon thing.
And dummy is kind of a fun perspective, because Yahweh is really smart, and by comparison, we aren't very bright. But, there are places where Yahweh refers to people as morons, and there are morons that come to see the light. I think once we become his kids, I think he realizes, we are flawed, or we're a long way from being empowered and enriched like we're ultimately going to be. And I just think, he's as happy as he can be that we're figuring out. He's not in any hurry.
Mm-hmm.
He's not in any hurry. We figured out he's happy as he can be. So I continually Kara, my God. Well, if he's Kara and his God, guess what? He isn't.
Yeah, he's not there. He's not answering.
Throughout the day. So that the rest of that day, he's not God, because God can't die.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Yahweh didn't even answer, did he?
No, you do not answer.
You know why? Because that body now had to be estranged from God, because what was laid on the sacrificial lamb?
All the sins of the family.
So guess what? Yahweh could not answer.
But yeah, his soul acted as a ransom. It says that right in Yahshiyah. I mean, period. End of, that's it.
Primary meaning of Anah, and this is the Hebrew word Anah, is to answer and respond. God did not answer and respond then.
Nope.
By the way, if you're covered with sin and you don't have the benefit of Pesach and Matzah, God's not going to respond to you. God did not respond to him because now he's slathered with all of this sin and yuckiness. So God,
yeah, there's no relief for me. I mean, that's horrible.
God can't be okay with this stuff. So if he had to not be God at that moment, because if he was God, God can't be associated with all this yuckiness. So it's another...
Not just that. I mean, you're in a timeless place here. I just want to point out here, Christians often talk about, how horrible the beating and the crucifixion was, and that is true. I will not. That is absolutely true.
Right.
But going to a place that's timeless,
right?
I don't care if you're there for an hour.
Yeah, if it's
you would experience it as eternity regardless.
Right.
It's horrid. It's horrible.
But the most important thing to take here is the realization that he is not God at this point. The body on that pole.
It's the soul of a man
God.
At that point.
It can't be God for two reasons. Well, three reasons. We've talked about two of them. One reason is God can't go to the place of separation from God. The other one we've talked about, God cannot die. But there's a third reason. God can't be associated with corruption and religion and politics and all of the sins of humankind. So they had to be associated with the soul of Yahusha, could not be associated with God.
Yeah, all of the nonsense that leads us away from Yahweh, he can't be associated with. That's his biggest concern.
Right.
I mean,
that's why he did not answer. Now, the primary meaning, answer and respond, primary meaning of Anah, right? What's the secondary meaning? Not second, it's probably eight down the list. But what is the religious and a legitimate translation of Anah in the right context? Doesn't it also mean to afflict?
Oh, yes, I said that.
Now, didn't I? I've shared this before, but Anah shows up in four of the seven Mikra, where, God was giving us an invitation. It's appropriate for us to respond to the invitation, to answer and respond to the invitation. That's why Anah is in four of the seven Mikra, because Yahweh has Tara, he's invited, and it's our job to respond. Now,
and you're talking about Yom Kippur?
Right, and this, it's in four of them. Yom Kippurim is the most famous of the four. And one of the things that I've said in Yom Kippurim, where it's translated there as afflict, and the others it's not, it's translated as answer. But same word, is that Yosha's soul is being afflicted so that we can answer and respond to Yah.
Right.
So the negative aspect of Anah actually fits in terms of understanding what's happening here. Yosha's soul was being afflicted because Yahweh did not respond. For our sake, he did not respond. He did not spare the rod. So Yahweh did not respond to him, so his soul is being afflicted. So we're in a position we can respond. So that's why it's so important to look at the light and the dark side of Hebrew words. That's why Hebrew words are written as choices. So you can see, it's like yare, or one of your favorite words, Larry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yare has a flip side for a reason, because you will either come to respect and revere Yahweh, or you will come to fear him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and fear isn't good.
That way.
Every time Yahweh talks about the people of fear, they're cowering, they're powder, they're beaten into powder, into dust, into the ground. I mean, there's nothing good that comes out of fearing Yahweh. Nothing that I can say.
But it's going to happen to the majority of people, because they're ultimately going to encounter him, and when they encounter him and they're ill prepared, that's going to be, whoa, intuitive, not good. So he says, you do not answer, Anna. And by night, in the absence of light in the darkness of room, there is no relief for me. There is no sound for me. There's total silence. So, you know, he's in the place of separation from God. He has thrived on Yahweh's every word. He's become the living embodiment of the word. So in the place of separation from Yahweh, the thing that he misses the most is listening.
Talking to him.
Talking to him, listening to him. Now, he can still talk. He can't hear him. He can't feast off Yahweh's testimony or Yahweh's words. He's been the living embodiment of Yahweh's words, and all of a sudden now, there is no Yahweh to listen to. That would be us in the ultimate darkness place, is not having God to listen to. That's where he found himself, without even being
in hopelessness. It's hopelessness.
Without being able to listen to God.
I'd be miserable if I couldn't read this stuff anymore.
Oh, man, me too.
I would absolutely be miserable.
But you are the set-apart one. Wow. Talking about, I mean, Kodesh, how is the Spirit described? Kodesh. How is Yahweh's name described? Kodesh. How is the covenant described? Kodesh. How are the Mikra described? Kodesh.
Set-apart.
Right. And what happens at the moment Pesach is over? What day of the work, day of the week is it?
It's the Sabbath.
Right. Starting Friday evening is the Shabbat. What is the Shabbat? Is it not also Kodesh?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, it's Kodesh.
So he's saying, you are Kodesh. Establishing the renown and reputation of the Roman Catholic Church. No, of the Christian Church.
Yeah, that was right after he said, like lions, you maul my feet.
Okay.
What word are you translating for church?
Yisrael. Oh, but we are told by some people that there's a new, true Yisrael.
Yeah.
This is Yisrael, the true, one and only, never changing, Yisrael. What does Yisrael mean?
Individuals who persist. Yeah. Individuals who persevere, endure with Yah, our God.
Yeah, and who engage with Yah, with God. Yeah, that's what Yisrael means.
So why do you have to go find somebody who's the true Israel? That's them. Yisrael.
All you got to do is translate the word.
It's astounding, isn't it? It's astounding.
You know?
Yeah.
No, I think there are. Multiple ways that you can interpret Yisrael, to be fair? Yeah, I think so. I think it's literally individuals who engage and endure with God, who are empowered by God, who persevere with God. That's its primary meaning. But Yaakov became Yisrael, and Yaakov's children became the 12 tribes of Yisrael. So in addition to that, there is a literal Yisrael that are descendants of Yaakov.
Let me ask you a question. I know that if I don't mind knocking you off track just a tiny bit. But, 12 tribes. However, you've got Joseph, and he has two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And he gives a blessing to the younger rather than the elder. And when they march out, they have the Lowi in the center, and they have 12 tribes on the outside because they have split his tribe into two. So shouldn't it be 13? Or are they? How do they count that way?
You know, I think what happens here is that the Lowi are...
They just don't count them as tribes?
Yeah, sometimes initially, they are a tribe of Israel. They have their own privileges and rights associated with being a tribe. And then they go to a very special group.
So when you set them apart,
they're a special person that are set apart from the rest of them. And that's the transition to say that at that point, you need to look at the Lowi as different.
Okay, so that's why he separates Manasseh and Ephraim.
Yeah.
Okay.
Our friend Frank, Power on High, Frank is a Lowi. Frank is a Lowi. His DNA is Lowi. Now, there are very special responsibilities associated with the Lowi. The Lowi are designed to bring Yisrael together with Yahweh. to...
They're uniters. Yeah.
Right, they're uniters. Their whole purpose is to help people understand the messages that are associated with the Mikre, and also to understand the connection between the Torah and the mercy seat and the Ark of the Covenant. That's their job. And they don't have an inheritance of land. They don't have properties. They exist to do that job. It's a big job. It's an important job. It's a wonderful job. That's their purpose. And so Yahweh sets them apart from all others to unite.
And fills up the gap that way. Okay.
Right. Fills up the gap that way.
And who did you say has this DNA? Who did you say?
Richard.
Frank.
Oh, Frank.
Really?
Frank, you know, Power on High, Frank.
Yeah.
The gentleman who has been really has grown with us in this relationship right from the beginning. He was a Christian counselor, family counselor, was extraordinarily engaged in Christianity as a Christian teacher and counselor. And very early in this process, and we're going back more than 10 years now, he came to say, oh my, what I'm saying is untrue. Oh my, the truth is so much better than the lie. Oh boy, this Paul stuff, this Bible stuff, this Trinity stuff, this church stuff, it has nothing to do with it. So Frank was among the very first, in the first handful of people that emerged from Christianity and came to be part of the Covenant family. He has a website called Power on High. It's very, very close to Don, who has the YHWH-QRA for Cara .com website. A marvelous guy. But he had a reason, and it has to do with a natural-born son that he did not know was his. It's a really a touching story about the son that he never knew he had. He came to know, and he did DNA testing to demonstrate that he is in fact this man's father. And that DNA testing he found out demonstrates that he's a Lowy. It's got all of the markers. Unequipped, he didn't know it. So here he was equipped, and actually he was is a Lowy. And when he first found out, his first response is the same as I said. I just started to laugh. And I said, there are a lot of responsibilities that come with being a Lowy.
That's right.
I know it. He said, man. He said, first thing I did is said, Dad, man, I'm not up to this challenge, but I guess whatever this means, now you're telling me why I was brought into this family, why you reached out and led me here, why my wife and I are now with you. I had no idea. And,
what turned him on? I mean, what turned him away from Christianity if he was so involved? I'm always interested. Do you recall?
I think it actually began with Yahweh's name. And went from there. But he read, when Yada Yah was the only book, and when it was so new that it was the Azab chapter, where I was trying to make sense of how our world was portrayed.
I remember that.
Yeah. It was back. He came to recognize the truth way back when that was the only chapter. He and Jeff Grill are the two people that strike me came to know the truth when that was the only chapter. In other words, they were. It's kind of like I think you, Kirk, at the moment you and your wife found that many of the things that you just knew had to be wrong with Christianity, and you knew were wrong with it, and things that you felt strongly had to be different about who God was. And then all of a sudden you're confronted with Yahweh's testimony in a blunt, bold, in-your-face sort of a way, and it resonates, and everything he's saying is exactly what you thought it had to be, and you go, wow, I got to learn more. He was that, and he was one of the few people that is religious who said, I'm going to go where the words lead. regardless of where they lead? Open to it. So that's the story of Frank Gill. He and
where's Frank located at?
Washington State.
Washington. Okay.
Yeah, he and his wife Diane. We talk regularly. Frank called. We talked for about 45 minutes today. He typically listens to the archives of the program. Although he and Chuck, who is part of the normally would be part of the chat room here, and Richard, who I know is part of the chat room tonight, and who posts all of these programs on the BlessYahweh.com site, have a group after the show. So Frank, his wife Diane, Don, who was with us 2 weeks ago, and gave was previously a Seventh Day Adventist, and now has the the ex-Marine, Chuck, and which is CB on our chat room, I believe that's the same Chuck, and then Richard, who has the Bless Yahweh site, talk for an hour after the show. Now, they can talk for an hour after the show because they're in Pacific time zone. So, it's not so late for them. So that's the Frank that I'm talking about. In fact, Frank sent me today something that was profoundly important for his son's recent awakening. And that is he took the translation of the 119th Psalm and then added in colors the New Living Translation, the King James Version, and one other version to it, and published it. And then when you see what Yahweh actually said and you compare it to the English translations, it's a real eye-opener. Mm-hmm. And he put them right there just so that his son can read through it, and it really had a profound influence on his son today. Mm-hmm. So that's the very long answer to your question, Kurt. Okay. In you, our fathers actually trusted. So he is speaking now of literal Yisrael. Talking about our father. In you, our fathers actually trusted. They totally trusted, and you constantly rescued them. You brought them away from danger to a safe place, delivering them, helped them escape and survive. So what, according to Yosha, now this is Yosha speaking, what according to Yosha is the basis of being rescued by Yahweh?
Being part of Yisrael.
Yes, and he uses the word...
Interesting.
Yeah, batak, twice. Well, yeah, twice, but talk twice, which is actually trusted, completely relied upon, was totally confident and genuinely secure in. Batah. Use it not once, but twice. It's Hebrew has a bunch of words. And he twice uses a word that says total and complete confidence, total trust, complete reliance. I desired that greatly when I was part of the Christian faith. I always wished that my faith was strong, that it was stronger, and I constantly tried, like so many Christians, to convince myself and to convince others that my faith was unwavering and strong, and it was always such an empty, hollow, hypocritical position, and it was always one of the great frustrations I had as a Christian. And the difference now in being part of Yahweh's family is I am totally relaxed. I can't even recall if any time in the last 10 years I said, Yahweh, I really wish you would help me with my confidence so that I could trust you more. Confidence and trust is complete. You know him? There's no... What more do you need? You know him? You trust him? I think that's there's a position where you just become comfortable and relaxed, and knowing how vastly superior knowing is to believing, and how much more comfortable understanding and complete confidence is than faith.
You don't have to ask him to forgive you five times a day with every
word. Well, you know, it does. It does help when you're not, you know, not obtuse, you know, you're not in opposition to Yahweh, that, you know, what you know and understand is what he said.
How many people say, well, did you ever hear Yahweh? Have you ever seen Yahweh? I say, yes. Did he ever talk to you? Have you ever
in his words.
Yes.
Yeah,
you
every
want to
time
see
you
him?
Read it.
I see him right now. I'm looking at him. I'm seeing him more clearly right at this very second than anyone else could possibly see him. That's not more clearly than you guys are seeing him or anyone who's listening is seeing him. We all see him equally clearly. All you got to do is look at his words. All you have to do is recite his words, and you're listening to him.
Yeah, Yael Conan didn't say, look at the visual of this guy who's come along. He said, he's the Word.
He's the Word. The living manifestation of the Word. Yep. So he says, in you our fathers totally trusted. In you constantly rescued them. They totally relied. Reliance and trust is the basis of salvation. And this, there is a precursor to trusting and relying. And to trust and rely, you have to know and understand. If you don't know and understand, you cannot trust and rely. If you know and understand, trust and reliance is easy.
Yeah.
You, they cried out to you, they cried out for help, for assistance, and they were delivered in you. They totally trusted and genuinely relied, and they were not disappointed nor disapproved. Do you think that Yosha is just taking this time because he's got nothing else going on, life is good, and I think I'm going to repeat Batak 3 times here for no apparent reason. It's just that I got nothing else to do.
No.
So what is the basis of Pauline Christianity?
Oh, just faith. You just got to
faith. So just believe. And what is...
it's not genuine reliance. See, that's faith in the unknown. It's faith in religious notions that cannot be true, by the way.
This is
trust. Yeah, this is
trust on knowledge.
And what is the second requirement of the covenant?
It's to trust in Yahweh.
Trust and rely on Yahweh, isn't it?
Once you've walked away, trust Him.
Right. So, in this particular case, Yosha is saying that those in Israel that were rescued exactly this way. They trusted and relied upon Yahweh. It is through trust and reliance, and you can only get to trust and reliance through knowledge and understanding. And when you trust,
which is what Yahweh says that his people lack. He never said you lack faith. He said you lack knowledge. You lack knowledge.
Right. He says my people are destroyed because they lack knowledge. Here he says that because they trusted and genuinely relied, they were not disapproved, and they were not disappointed. They're the antithesis of one another, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
They both say the same thing. You just come at it from a different point of view. My people are destroyed for lack of knowing. And here, those who knew and therefore could trust and rely, they were not disappointed. They were saved. Now, from this point, Yosha begins to describe what happened. I am but a crimson grub, not extant and present as a person, rebuked and reproached by man, and disrespected and despised by the family. This is Yahweh fulfilling, and when sin is associated with him, I will not spare the rod. And the crimson grub, a bloodied scarlet pulp, no one other than the Romans consistently beat, whipped their victims that they were going to crucify to a bloody pulp before doing so. And they did so by putting sharp
metal
objects, metal, in the leather of the whip. So when the whip went out, it didn't bruise the skin. It literally ripped the skin from the body.
I've seen pictures of it. I believe they had sharp metal on it, actually.
Yeah. Literally, it played a person alive. You no longer look like a man. That's why one of these things about, he was bodily resurrected. If he was bodily resurrected, it would be the most ghoulish. You know, we had those vampire movies, and they all, you know, kind of look ghoulish. So you imagine
the zombie Jesus.
Yeah.
The zombie Jesus.
But the most disgusting of all possible zombies. You know, his head was filled with holes. Every time that whip whipped his back, it would mar his face and his neck and his chest and his legs and his buttocks and his stomach. He was nothing but this gooey blob when he was affixed to that upright pole. If he was bodily resurrected, it would be the most frightening, despicable sight you could ever see.
Of course, somehow in their minds, they don't say he went around like that.
No.
But I guess they would have to because, you know, when he rematerialized for Thomas and showed him the holes, that was a rematerialization thing. It wasn't an actual, the body was gone. But I guess that they would have to consider what you're saying then. I mean, since they're not saying what we're saying.
If it's the same body, that body was whipped to an absolute pulp. And so it had been repulsive. It had been frightening. It had been repulsive. By the way, they didn't recognize that body. They saw that body. They didn't recognize
that. It would have been a horror show. Right. Is what it would have been, sure.
Right, and if it's not the same body, then what's the whole concept of bodily resurrection? If it's a different body, then what's the whole concept of that he bodily rose? If it's a different body, if it's not a different body, it would be ghoulish.
And then, by the way, that's very important. You know, when you finally figured out and shared with the rest of us, and then we could clearly see it right in the PSOC instructions. Another thing, you know, hey dummy, take a look. You know, that the body was gone. The body's never mentioned.
Right.
Never once mentioned. Not at all mentioned.
Right.
It's the nephesh, the soul, that comes back up to meet up with a set apart spirit.
Right.
So you get people saying, oh, yeah, this is a rip-off on the one that... This is a rip-off on what the druids did. This is a rip-off on this. This is a rip... No, in each one of those, there's a literal body.
Right.
There's a literal body resurrecting. There's no body resurrecting here.
You know, like
no way.
Bacchus, Tammuz, it's a physical body, which is why they have the statues to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, the statues to all of them. You know, and they
think
it's a literal body. No, it's not a literal body. Could he manifest a material form? Absolutely. That's the nature of the transition between energy and matter.
By the way, Terry Sable went off at 6:30 out Pacific time. So
yeah, we're still recording. It'll be part of the archive.
Okay.
You know, it's 9:34 here at the East Coast. My days have been rather full here recently. Probably it's a good spot to stop. We'll pick up next Friday. Next Friday, I'm actually going to be in Ohio, and so I'll be able to do this from Ohio. I'm really looking forward to doing that.
I wish you and the wife a good Shabbat there.
I'll re-up with BTR for another year, and then I'll have JB see if he can fix this up in terms of some more shows. So we'll not have this problem. But for those who are listening to the archives, it's nice to be part of a family that is as accepting and is just joyful to be around. Nobody complained. We ended up, even though we started an hour late and there was a half an hour late and there was no way to, and every sign was, we're not going to be here tonight. And yet the chat room is still full.
Yeah.
And
well, I love these shows.
And I love the family. Yeah, I love the family. So we've got some wonderful folks we could spend eternity with.
Well, you guys have a good weekend. I am out.
See you, Larry.
Larry.
Kill me.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, buddy.
Thank you.
Happy Shabbat, both of you and your family.
Yeah.
Good. See you later.